You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Busker. How are you doing today?
I'm tired today, Dan. I don't know if you're going to get my usual positivity in this podcast.
Oh, there should be no positivity because we're recording about an hour after the initial college football playoff rankings came out. And we're going to talk about that later. I know that Emily has no interest because she doesn't believe in the playoffs. She believes in the BCS.
BCS, bring back. What was that?
The Bowl Coalition. She's a big Bowl Coalition person.
I literally read that book, Death to the BCS, and I was so mad. I was like, why are we killing this thing to make something way worse?
I think the college
football... That's disguised as something better, but it's not better.
We were just talking about this. The issue with the college football playoff, in my opinion, and I think Emily agrees with me, is that it's not that four teams get in or 12 teams or whatever model you want to be, get a shot to win the national championship in a tournament format. It's that's decided by a group of Power Five athletic directors with one like G5 athletic director thrown in to say, look, everyone has a voice here. And they all go into the room. They literally talked this time on the ESPN show about how they figuratively and literally left their hats outside the door to show that they weren't going to be biased inside.
That picture killed me.
And then oh my God, it's so bad. And then they walk in there and they do things that are blatantly biased. They walk out. ESPN will go to them like, oh, where'd you put Cincinnati at number 6-4? And they go, well, they only had that road win at Notre Dame, which was a good win, and nothing else. And then they don't go, well, Ohio State's only ranked win, according to you guys, is against Minnesota. And, you know, it's questionable if they should be ranked or not. They don't ask that type of follow-up. They just go, that's great. And you've got Oregon there. And they're like, yep. And they're like, cool. And they move on without, like, a second thought about the team who lost to Stanford being in the playoff. You know what I mean?
First of all.
I'm sorry. Forgot my
shot. We're going to have a conversation about that later, but.
I'm sorry, 3-5 Stanford doesn't do it for you?
No, I don't know. I think Stanford's bad. That's not the point. But Oregon is not as bad as that loss. Like,
no, I know they're not, but they still have a loss. But they still have a loss. And
traditionally that would be a good loss.
I chose them because they got put at number 4, not because of anything directly against Oregon. So you do know what the O on their helmet stands for, right? It's all those national championships.
Outrageous.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I also got one for Nebraska because that one stands for knowledge, but they don't know it yet. Anyways.
Knowledge is spelled with a K.
That's the joke. Yeah. That they don't know that. Zinger. Nailed it. Off
this
to a
is going
to
be fun.
I don't want to get sidetracked into that playoff discussion just yet. I do want to say that I also have great respect for Cincinnati, but we'll talk about that after we get through our previews for week 10.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, we're going to start there, hopefully not get too derailed in the middle when we hit the Cincinnati game, which I'm sure.
No, I'm not going to let you get derailed.
I'm going to get derailed.
I'm tired.
Then we're going to talk about it again at the end. I know you're tired. I still am very upset. I hit a long string of angry tweets. And frankly, I'm just happy.
No, I haven't even been on Twitter. I stayed off Twitter.
It's not.
I was like,
I can't. I didn't read many other people's tweets. I just kept firing my own out into the void. No,
I don't get. Let me ask one question before we go into SMU Memphis. Everyone's making a big deal about the fact that Desmond Ridder did not go on the show when they asked him if he would come on to talk about it after or whatever. And he declined.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it was like
they had Kenneth Walker on instead. He was on for literally 30 seconds. There's no point to it.
I mean, everyone's like, oh, you show him Desmond, like. Why? He probably had other stuff to do, like practice or school or.
And he's like,
I don't think he was like sticking it to anybody. I think he was just like living his life and just.
Yeah, he probably just didn't have the time for it. you know, I don't think he was sticking it to anyone.
Like he wasn't
told them no,
to
like
say,
a few days before
you know?
The rankings came out, probably. Right. No, I didn't even hear about that. I don't think that's sticking it to the man or anything like that.
Everybody made a huge deal. Like, yeah, you tell him Desmond Ritter. Like, okay, tell him what?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. We will get to some talk on that later. But first, all our games are on Saturday this week, which I know you're happy about that because it is tough sometimes when we're going back on like Sunday night, Monday night to record the review podcast. And you're like, what happened a week ago?
trying to write, trying to do everything before these Thursday night games is very hard. So it's nice to have that extra day or two.
I'm just glad we don't cover the MAC because I just turned off the Toledo Eastern Michigan game to record this.
Oh no. How was it going? Well,
14-7 Toledo was winning, but Eastern Michigan just recovered a muff punt. So, you know,
here we go.
As it goes. SMU at Memphis, noon on Saturday. Let's get into it before we delay any further. Seth Hennigan is still day-to-day, according to one of the Memphis reporters that I was looking up today to make sure I had that down, which means I'm thinking Peter Parrish is your likely starter. They're saying that Hennigan is not been able to go through a full practice yet. Which
it's his hand, like, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I read.
And, also on the injury front, Bentley got rehurt against Houston, which I think was kind of quiet on that long run that got called back because Mordecai's knee was down on the snap. So I'm going to guess not going to play because he's been really banged up all year. And I'm going to assume that they're going to probably dress him and keep him off to try to heal him up and just do it like that. So I guess my question is, the clear weakness on SMU is their secondary. You'd agree with that, right?
Yeah.
And Peter Parrish, who was not good throwing the ball, but tried to throw it like 1,000 times against UCF. Is he able to throw into that SMU secondary? Because that's the only time we've really seen Parrish play was against UCF, and he threw like 50 times. You know what I mean? He threw a few tough bounce interceptions and a couple bad balls, and he didn't read pressures well against UCF. Like anytime they blitzed anything exotic, he didn't see it coming, got lit up. He's a big, strong runner with the ball, and he didn't always go down when they got to him, but is he going to be able to exploit that weakness on SMU?
I don't know. I think that because Seth Hennigan's day to day, we might see him play.
Yeah. The way I heard it with Hennigan was that he's having trouble going through a full practice, and you know, practice doesn't contain things like contact for a quarterback to begin with, let alone an injured one. You know what I mean? Like that to me sounds like he's having trouble throwing the ball consistently and like without it being too sore that he has to stop. So like just the way what I saw was worded said, who knows? You know what I mean?
Okay. But
who knows?
This is a thing. So SMU's favored 5.5, I think, was what I last saw. Is that? It wasn't very much is what it was my point. And I think that's, there's two things. Okay. Three things, that, and the fact they're coming off this, you know, huge, the way they lost to Houston, it's not one of those, oh, you know, shucks, we lost. It was like dwindling seconds of the game on a play that, like, that's about the worst way I feel like you could lose a game like that. So
up there.
You couple that, and then you couple it with the fact that Memphis, while they have been a wild card all over, you know, the place, they are 3-1 at home, and they've won the last three at home against SMU. Yes. So I think if you look at all those things together, that makes sense to me why SMU's favored by so little. And I think that we might see a little chaos in this game, and it might be close, which would be crazy. But
I mean, Cincinnati better hope there's no chaos in this game. But no, my other concern is I don't think Memphis can get that many stops on this SMU team. I mean, like I said, it seems like Bentley's banged up, you know what I mean, it's even more than he had been before. So I don't think will go based on, again, what I've seen. That's not that he's out. It's based on Tuesday. It seems like he's too banged up to go probably. But I mean, why would I have any thought that Memphis can slow down SMU's passing attack? I just don't see why. I don't think that. And with the way Memphis has struggled to run the ball consistently, and if their quarterback is either out with an injury or playing through an injury, I don't think that Memphis can keep up when, if and when this becomes a shootout, because it will likely become a shootout just the way these two teams are designed.
Yeah, it could. Or SMU so demoralized by all the lack of respect that they just don't play well. Sure. And Memphis ends up having like one of those games where everything goes right and they have the environment. So
I don't know. The environment's definitely true because Liberty Bowl is tough to play in at all times.
3-1 at home for a team that is
4-4.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, that's my caveat for that. So
I don't inherently disagree with that, but this isn't a big game and SMU wins their non-big games. You know, so I don't know.
Maybe
I'm going to go with SMU to win this game. I don't know about you though. It seems like you're kind of leaning Memphis.
It's really tough because my gut is to pick Memphis for the chaos, but I am trying not to do crazy things anymore that put me in a bad spot. So.
In terms of the standings that we've got going.
Right. You know what? But I'm going to pick Memphis. I'm doing it. There's not too many that I'm going to go off script here, but that one, I got to get it out of the way. So,
all right. That sounds good. All right. Let's move on to our 3 o'clock kick, which is Temple at ECU. Mm-hmm. What type of effort do you think Temple's going to come out here with? Because we talked last week before the UCF game that they had about how they needed to start fast in that one. And they didn't, like they haven't all season. Yeah. They've been a slow starter. And like I said in our review show, it kind of feels like they've given up on the season. You know, it almost feels like as a team, they're just they come out and they're just a little bit demoralized to begin with. Do you think they go into ECU saying, hey, we still have a shot at bowl eligibility on the off chance we went out basically at this point? Does anyone think, you know, go out there and play hard and fight for it? Or does ECU, you know, play a better game than they have been? They need to play a clean 60 minutes because they're not doing that. You know what I mean? And take care of business. I kind of lean towards ECU puts together a clean 60 minutes before Temple comes out and plays hard and fast for the way the season's going.
I agree. I don't really think there is anything else to add to that. That's a fair analysis. It's just not Temple's year. It's just not. ECU at home, they did struggle, you know, with USF
for about a half.
And I chalk that up to weather. So
three first half fumbles is going to do that too, which is why ECU needs to play a clean 60 minutes against a team that they should beat and prove that they can do that at home, because, you know, you should be able to do that at home. But I don't see a way that Temple comes out and competes in this game, to be honest.
Yeah. As long as ECU doesn't turn the ball over, you know, like obviously that was something they were going to clean up after last week. So I think this is a pretty open shut game for the Pirates. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Only you beat you, ECU. And I'm assuming I'm going to take ECU. I'm assuming you are too, based on that conversation. Yeah.
All ECU.
All right. 3:30. There's two 3:30 kicks. Actually, I'm going to start with Navy at Notre Dame. This is one of those great traditional rivalries we like to talk about. It's played annually. You don't have to laugh.
We like to talk about you.
I love to talk about this.
You love to talk.
I love this game. I'll be honest. I do love this game. But I mean, do you know why it's played every year?
No.
It's played every year. So in World War II, the University of Notre Dame was hemorrhaging money because frankly, everywhere was at that time. And they were looking at having to shut down, and the Naval Academy needed places to train, you know, soldiers for this thing that was happening in the Pacific, you know. They came to an agreement, Notre Dame and the Naval Academy, that Navy would pay Notre Dame a disproportionate amount of money to use their campus as a training facility during that time. And it was with that money that the university was able to stay open. And so forevermore, they played an annual football game, and Notre Dame basically plays the game at Navy's discretion. When Navy wants to stop playing, Notre Dame will stop playing.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's cool.
So it's like a standing thing because of that history to it. Most years, Notre Dame wins the game. Most years, Notre Dame does it pretty easily because of the talent discrepancy we always talk about that Navy has with other teams. And Notre Dame just happens to usually be a top 10 or so team. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Can Ken has beaten Brian Kelly a couple of times, though, which you don't often see from Navy coaches. You know, he was on the staff that it was Paul Johnson's staff in 2007 that broke like a 44-year streak in a row of wins, or sorry, of losses to Notre Dame. So Ken does know how to beat Notre Dame. Look the other way, though. Notre Dame's used to playing the triple option. Like I said, they play Navy every year. They play Army and Air Force every now and again, too. Marcus Freeman, the defense coordinator, was at Cincinnati. He's played Navy a couple times and Army at least once. So, like, there's familiarity with the triple there. I haven't seen an update yet on Kyle Hamilton, Notre Dame's All-American safety. His knee got injured, not terribly, but enough to miss the North Carolina game against USC. And Notre Dame's running this weird two quarterback system to be aware of and look out for. Other than that, though, I think it probably comes down to one team's just much more naturally talented than the other.
Right.
You know, I mean, they know each other well. It's not a shocker. I think Notre Dame wins this game. I don't think Notre Dame blows out Navy, but I think Notre Dame probably wins by like two scores.
Yeah, I would say that sounds about right. It's a bummer because Navy, you know, got a little bit of momentum and looked alive, and they're going to go into this. It's tough to play.
Well, that's what I was saying about this whole stretch of games where they had to play like SMU, Cincinnati, you know, Houston.
Yeah,
you know,
they have not had it easy.
No, not at all.
But God bless them and their little heart for playing tough and
for actively improving that during that stretch.
Right, too. Exactly. Like getting better at things instead of sinking into the you know, whatever you want to call it, quagmire, quicksand. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. Has fallen into.
You're talking about Navy is sinking, and then instead of into like a bottomless ocean trench, you went with quicksand. No.
Yeah, a bog or a mire or like a...
But like, why would the Navy be in a bog? They would be in the ocean. So if they sink, they're going to sink into the ocean.
I just think of... Those are things I think of when I think of things sinking.
I don't think anyone thinks of bogs as a place... Like anyone outside of like Central Ireland would use bog as like the first thing that something would sink into. Like a swamp.
It was literally the first word I thought of.
It's like,
what is my English major showing?
Yeah. A protected wetland. I gotcha.
All right, whatever. I'm picking Notre Dame.
Yeah, so am I. Like I said, I think it's just a simple talent thing. It's not so much lack of familiarity that they can catch up with the triple. The other 3:30 game is Tulsa at Cincinnati. College Game Day is going to be here, and Cincinnati better blow them out by about 50. They better beat them so bad that Phil Montgomery has to be fired. Yeah. Like, I mean, again, we'll talk more about the playoff thing later. Cincinnati came out at number 6. Gary Barta pointed out that, you only beat Tulane 31-12. You know what I mean? Which, you know, that's still a pretty big win in terms of margin. If we're getting into it, I know how they got there wasn't the prettiest, but you better make this game look like Tulsa needs to fire Philip Montgomery on the spot and leave him eating a sad bowl of Skyline chili.
The funniest thing about this game, I think, is that there is a common opponent also in Ohio State. You know what I mean? 20. And so 41-20 is what Ohio State beat Tulsa by. So do you think that Cincinnati has that written down somewhere? Like, hey, we have to best them and then double that.
Yeah, but there's one other common opponent too that it doesn't matter if the committee's eyes, because Indiana exists too. And Ohio State beat Indiana better than Cincinnati did, frankly.
Yeah.
So like, Cincinnati gained the bigger one over Tulsa, they'll write off as Ohio State was just finding themselves. And look at where they are now.
The point is that they need at least to beat one of the teams, but they can't go both, you know. Okay.
Yeah, you definitely need to beat Tulsa by a wider margin than that. Preferably you beat them like 49-14 rather than, something.
No, I think clear Cincinnati, that you beat
them better than Ohio State.
I think Cincinnati drops more than 50 on them. 100%.
I think Cincinnati has to.
I just think they will do it because they can. Tulsa's bad. I mean,
But so is Tulane.
Yeah.
If we're being honest and fair about
That's fair.
This is
I wonder who would win. Who would win Tulane Tulsa?
They're going to play, I think.
I still think Tulane. They must play. I still think Tulane wins that game.
I would probably pick Tulane right now just because.
Right? Yeah, they do. They play at Tulsa. No, you were. I'm pretty sure you were saying they weren't going to win that game.
I don't know. I don't remember what I said 2 minutes after I said.
I'm pretty sure you were like looking at Tulane's schedule and you're like, oh, they have one win and it's USF at home. They get Tulsa at home too.
I probably said 1-2 wins.
No, you said one. You're like, they're going to go 4-1 or 1-4. Sorry. Cause they play UCF anyways.
Whatever.
We're going sideways whatever. Now. Cincinnati's going to drop 50. It's sad, but it's true. It doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme, but I hope Jerome Ford goes off and has a day. So I'm picking Cincy.
I am too. Do you think there's any chance that Tulsa can make this a game at all?
No, I don't.
No,
I actually think we see Davis Brin go out.
Ooh, you think they bench him?
I think that it doesn't go well for him and that he may not finish the game. That's what I think.
All right,
I don't love that. I don't love that for him.
Najee Sanders is going to Joe Theismann, Davis Brin. You heard it here first. Emily's predicting a
I don't love that for him.
Leg injury.
It feels like it was written in stone already. Like I don't wish that for anybody, but it just feels like that's what's going to happen. So
no, I
tell you,
I'll be honest. I don't see a world where where Tulsa has the dogs to keep up with since
they're like the same. They're like the same person.
it's bad.
Pretty much. Yeah.
All right, let's just move on to this. Let's move on to this 4 o'clock kick. 4 o'clock, a nice awkward time for a kickoff. Tulane at UCF, homecoming at UCF. Great time to be there. Go into the pond. Everybody gets their ducks. It's a fun time. I have not seen an update on Pratt's health. Last I checked, he was still in concussion protocol from that hit that we talked about a little bit.
Yeah. Not his first concussion of the season either, let it be noted.
Yeah, the hit he took against Oklahoma you're referring to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Tulane is 104th in the country in rush defense. And
thank you for that.
Here's what I'm going to say. And I think UCF's going to try to run the ball. If I had to take a guess, with Mikey Keene, the freshman quarterback who, except against Temple, has struggled this year. I think you're going to see a lot of Isaiah Bowser and a lot of Johnny Richardson. And I think it's going to be not a super high scoring game necessarily, but I don't see where Tulane gets their points from either. And I see them allowing a lot of long, slow, no huddle touchdown drives, which is what Gus likes, where he kind of methodically goes down the field on you. UCF's defense has allowed 14 points in the last two games, and seven of those 14 points were basically against the third stringers with 30 seconds left last week. This UCF defense is playing at an extremely, extremely high level. They forced 7 turnovers the last 2 weeks. Tulane has a turnover issue. You know, we've talked about this before. You know, it doesn't matter. They like coughing the ball up. I don't see Tulane scoring more than 10 points on UCF at the bounce house on homecoming. I don't see it happening. I mean, the only reason they scored 12 points at home last week against Cincinnati was they had the safety. And, you know, Cincinnati was half asleep. I don't think UCF will be half asleep for this game.
No. I don't think so. What's the weather like in central Florida?
Perfect. Oh, in November. It's perfect.
So it's not going to be like humid or.
I mean, it'll be like, it's like summertime other places. It's like probably in the low 80s usually. It's still humid, but it's not like summer humid. And you're a lot less likely to get rainstorms at this point.
That's good.
So.
Whiteout game. Mm-hmm. Fans are encouraged to wear white for homecoming. That's nice.
Ooh, I know. but anyways, I don't see a way Tulane keeps it close, to be honest.
I agree. I'm picking UCF, obviously, at home. I'm not going to pick against the Knights. I think this is going to be... Yeah, I've always been on the gut. I like Gus Malzahn. He's one of my favorite coaches to chat with. I was excited when we got this job. It was just that Louisville game was tough. You know,
Louisville game was a couple of bad bounces. You know what I mean? And Gabriel breaking his collarbone on the last play is obviously the disaster of the season so far, because they probably beat Navy if they've got a Gabriel in to run the offense.
It'd be different. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It just would, you know what I mean?
And I hate to see that in Gus's first year, that kind of adversity, but break.
Yeah. But you know what?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other injuries too, not just Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah.
It's a full team sport. Based on what Gus said, it seems like Jalen Robinson is getting closer to being back, the wide receiver.
That's good.
No real update on Gabriel yet. They're being very tight, close to the vest with that, but yeah. He looks better if you like see him on the sideline and stuff like that.
It's like, why would there's no way he comes back right for a month?
It's not his throwing shoulder.
Well, I understand that, but at this point,
I'd love to see him come back this year because I think he's coming back next season. You know what I mean? So like, if he's good to go this year, like you have to make sure that's all established that this is your job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't.
You know what I mean? I think there's a chance if Gabriel came out this year and was like putting up monster numbers in the second system away from Heupel's that he would have gone pro, especially since it's a weak quarterback class, but with the broken collarbone, he's not going to, I don't think, you know what I mean? I think he's going to come back and be like, all right, now let me show what I can do this time around.
UCF is favored by 13. I think they go more than that.
Yeah. I think they cover that as well.
By a lot, like well over.
Yeah, I think it's going to look something like 31-7 in that range in terms of that type of score.
Ugh, I hate it. It's making me sad talking about this. So let's move on
to our primetime 7:30 kick. Yes. Houston at USF. USF back-to-back weeks on primetime.
Good for them. The little engine that could.
Houston Jeff Scott in the hangover. Bulls.
No.
I mean, no. If SMU is hungover from a loss, Houston's got to be hungover from the win, right?
You know what is funny about that? I've never really believed in the hangover, but now that I'm looking at the schedule this week, if there was one team I probably wouldn't want to play like that in a hangover, it might be South Florida. Do you know what I mean?
Explain.
Like, in the sense
more,
that...
More words.
And then... Okay, let me say it like this. South Florida is not a team generally you'd have to worry about.
Agreed.
You know, this season's not their season. Everybody knows it. Yeah, that's fine.
Last year or the year before that.
But. Okay, that's fine. But they have, you can't argue that they have made adjustments and gotten better in some areas that they needed to. So it's, they're not going backwards, I feel like. They've actually improved. And we've said that in multiple games.
Yeah, they've been building a good base to build on going forward.
They put together a good first half against TCU. What is to stop them from putting together an even better half against Houston and giving them a little bit of a scare? And you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they have a complete game in them. So I don't think you have to worry about it over the course of the game, but I could foresee maybe one half or at least a quarter of fight. It's not inconceivable.
Yeah. I mean, they could come out. I mean, USF is a very good running team. I talked about this last show, two shows ago. They've established in the past few weeks, hey, we can run the ball. We've got several good running backs who can be power on you. You know, Houston, they've got a very good defense and they're a very athletic defense, but they're coming off a big game. Like I just said, they might not be super interested in going and getting run into. You know what I mean? They're going to have to act like a brick wall against that that running attack, because I also don't think there's any chance USF can throw the ball on Houston. It doesn't matter who they're playing at quarterback. Houston's got a great pass rush. They have lockdown corners. They're not going to.
That's fair.
They're not going to do anything in the air.
But Jeff Scott is smart. Right. And I think he will adjust. I think
I'd be surprised if USF throws it a dozen times. I just don't think that they're going to be interested. Like, I think the game plan is going to be, we're going to run first and second down, and anything third and five or shorter, we're going to run it again.
We're going to run it again.
You know what I mean?
I think Houston
designed this.
They got through, we talked about their schedule. They got through this like hump, and now the rest of the season, USF, Temple, Memphis, UConn. Okay. And you have to be thinking like, we got through this part and it's like a breath of air, right? Mm-hmm. You're taking this breath, but don't breathe too hard because you could have a bad game against teams. I don't think they're going to lose to USF, but I don't think we're going to see. I mean, look at what they did with SMU in that first half. Mm-hmm. They ran up, but then just completely
they let them come back in.
Yeah. So
part of that's a credit to SMU's ability to be resilient as well, though.
True.
You know,
I just like that USF has fight in them. So I think that they're...
I agree. Like, we've talked about USF and Temple a lot of times in the same breath because they're both, I think most people would agree, the two bottom teams in the conference in terms of, you know,
yeah.
I do my power rankings every week. I usually put those two back there in some order. You know, maybe I'll sneak Tulsa back there, or, you know, Navy at points this season has been back there.
When Tulsa gets 60 dropped on them, you better put them down there.
I've been moving them backwards slowly and steadily.
Good.
The thing is, Tulsa does have 3 wins as well. I know Temple does too, but.
Temple is worse than USF.
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah. They played straight.
There's no hope there. It's sad. It's bad. It's sad. It makes me sad.
I know you like Temple, but they're in a bad place. Temple.
Yeah. They're in a dark place right now.
They're not in a good spot. Anyways, I'm going to take Houston.
Houston, same. Yeah.
I don't think there's a ton of debate about that.
So really our only disagreement is that first game, Memphis.
Yeah. This is how I protect my lead.
Yeah, I see that. But I got to do something. So this isn't even really enough.
Start getting weird. Yeah.
We'll see. I'm going to look like a genius, though, if Memphis upsets them.
I guess.
I don't think anybody's picking Memphis.
I'll give you credit for that.
I just feel like something weird's going to happen. Like, we're going to get another one of those Calvin Austin weird plays. I don't know. Something weird's going to happen.
These two, I think the last time they played at the Liberty Bowl was the, it would have been the time game day was there. And it was a really, really good shootout between the two that Memphis won, because SMU doesn't win big games.
Memphis has won the last 3 at home against SMU.
Yeah.
And they're 3-1 at home. That to me is the biggest thing there where you could make the argument.
Memphis is really good at home. I'm not going to deny that at all. They are. There's no taking that away from them. I just think that this year Memphis has a lot more problems than they have in past years. And SMU is still very good, especially in offense. That's all.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, we'll see.
We will. I'm going to transition us to a little bit of playoff talk. I know it's not your favorite.
No, it's all right. Go for it.
No. It's not your favorite, like we were talking about before the show, though, because it devalues the other bowl games. It devalues, in a lot of respects, teams that aren't in that conversation of 5 to 6 teams that could get in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I just think it's so specific.
Yeah, it takes away from the game as a whole. And, like, I think
there's so much other football going on, and it's like all of this attention is being derived to this reveal show. Where do you really think that something's going to be revealed that we didn't already know? Like, those people out there hoping that Cincinnati was going to get in, wake up. They're just, I'm not, like, Cincinnati is a good team. Mm-hmm. I don't realistically think that they could win 2 big games to win a national title against the top 4 right now.
I think the argument against them, this is from a UCF guy who raged in 2017 and 18, just absolutely raged against the playoff system.
And you guys just declared yourselves national champions, and that was that.
And it's in the NCAA record book, so don't take that away.
Yeah, I've seen the banner. I've seen it.
It's better.
So why isn't Cincinnati just do that? Like, hey, we're in the playoff because we say that we are.
We're not in the playoff. National champions, different.
They should just show up at the playoff site and just play.
They show up at the Cotton Bowl. Like,
they're like, hey, we're here.
Yeah. What's up? What are you going to do about
sabotage it? Sabotage one of the team's buses and then show up and be like, well, since the other team's not here, like, we'll play.
Yeah.
There we go. Solved the problem.
Georgia showed up and all their buses had slashed tires so they couldn't make it.
Exactly. Come on, get creative, Bearcats.
No, but the point that you're making, though, is correct. Like, especially when you look at the game through, like, the AAC or the G5 lens, like, no, most of these teams are never going to get that shot at the playoffs. So you should look at the sport for other things. Like, you compete for conference championships first and foremost. That's part of why being in a conference is important to a lot of teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It gives you that opportunity to, this is what we're playing for at the end of the year, not a national championship, because they're not going to let us in. It's why you put emphasis on bowl games, even if it's a small bowl game like the Bahamas Bowl or the Cure Bowl, or, you know, insert.
I want to go to the Bahamas Bowl so bad. Kim and I are going to go this year.
I mean, why would you not want to go?
That's the thing, is some of these bowl games are incredibly fun and important to the teams in them.
Are you going to go to the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl?
No, I hate LA, so.
I love LA. I don't feel like that. I'm not much of a singer. But
what you're saying is how I feel, too, for the most part, yes.
Now let's talk about this playoff. let's get real focused on it. Cincinnati came in the initial rankings at number six. There are two teams with a loss in the playoffs top four and another team at number five with a loss. At this point, we all take a deep breath. And there's a lot that we can say about how this is rigged against Cincinnati, which is true. There's a lot we can say about how it's just 13 old men for the most part, in a boardroom with vested interest in playing Power 5 teams ahead of G5 teams.
I think there's women in there.
There's only like one or two women, I think.
Isn't Condoleezza Rice in there?
She was in the initial one. They change it every year, though. they flash on the selection show, and there's a lot of men.
Frankly. I mean, I know it's old white guys for sure, but I know, yeah, feel like there is some women in there.
There are a couple women, but like disproportionately men.
Yeah, well, that's sports in general, so that doesn't surprise
me. Fair enough, but like, you get what I'm saying, where it's just like, it's an old boys club that's keeping it with them, where they've got a vested interest. They can hang their hats at the door, quote unquote, if they want to, but it doesn't actually make for anything because they walk in there and they have a vested interest.
Right.
There's a lot I could say. I could point out that Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin are all ranked, but SMU, Houston, and UTSA are not ranked. I don't think that's right at all. I think that also disproportionately affects Cincinnati and Ohio State's resume in particular, as it gives Ohio State a top 25 win and takes away potential top 25 games in the future from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. That, to me, it matters. You know what I mean? It also gives Ohio State or Michigan State, whoever, or I guess Michigan too, technically could still win the Big Ten East. It gives them a shot at a ranked team in the Big Ten championship game, which, I'm sorry, Wisconsin should not be ranked. They're not a good football team. I know they're 5-3 and beat Iowa. They're not good. Iowa's offense doesn't really exist this year. It's not there right now where it needs to be. And they got one for that. Minnesota lost to Bowling Green. I can't forgive that. I can't. You know what I mean? Like, if we're doing this like this, like, that bothers. Mississippi State at three losses is ranked 17th. Why? Because they beat A&M, who has been, had a backup quarterback and couldn't get 10 yards on offense the whole game. The whole thing top to bottom bothers me so much. And I know I shouldn't let it, because of everything we just said of no, Cincinnati's not getting in the same way UCF was never going to be let in. Like, the odds are they're going to find a reason to jump Oklahoma ahead of them, or Michigan ahead of them, or even Wake Forest ahead of them, who's also getting screwed by this, by the way. Because, if Wake Forest's name was Clemson, they would be number two in the country and no one would bat an eye or mention their strength of schedule once. But they're Wake Forest, so they're getting the same "you're not in the club" kind of squeeze that Cincinnati is, or the rest of the AAC is. And it bothers me so much how blatant it is. And I know I shouldn't let it, because it's blatant every year and I should be used to it. And I am used to it. I just hate it so much.
Yeah.
Gary Barta went up there and said, "We have a great respect for Cincinnati and the Notre Dame win was impressive, but who else have they beaten?" You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just the reality, is they're going to hit them with "who else have you beaten through the conference championship game?" And SMU and Houston aren't likely to be ranked through this whole process because, well, they decided that they don't want them to be ranked, which means they're never going to cast a top 25 win, which means the only thing that you have if you're Cincinnati is hoping Notre Dame goes 11-1 and like hoping that that's somehow enough to get you in, which it won't be. And I know things will quote unquote work themselves out around you that should hypothetically mean you move up. Bama's going to lose again. They're either going to lose to Auburn or Georgia. Like, it's just, they're going to lose again. You know what I mean? Michigan State and Ohio State, they have to play each other. Like, there's a chance Ohio State has two losses. Michigan and Ohio State have to play each other. You know what I mean? It'll quote unquote work itself out, but it'll work itself out in a way where Cincinnati never gets into the top four. And that's just how it is.
Yeah. That's how it was always going to be.
Yeah. And again, I wrote an article about how, like, if you want to know what the committee thinks of Cincinnati moving forward, pay attention to where three teams in particular are ranked: Notre Dame, SMU, and Houston. When Notre Dame's number 10, which I could argue is too low for them, and SMU and Houston aren't ranked at all. So that's them setting up the schedule for failure. And since it's them picking who's in the top 25 and then basing your standings in the top 25 based on the top 25 wins that they decided that you have, it's just a system of just, we're not trying to get an E rating, but it's not a good system. I was going to say a phrase I shouldn't say. You know, like it's a bad system. You know, I could make the argument that Oregon has one good win against Ohio State, but where are their other good wins at? Because I see a not good loss, but mm-hmm. like the Pac-12 doesn't have any other ranked teams and they're still number four in this. So, you know what I mean? Like with a loss and no other ranked wins on the way. You know, yeah. So like there's all these different arguments I can make as to why Cincinnati should be in ahead of each team that's ahead of them, except Georgia, obviously, because Georgia's the best team this year and you don't even really need a playoff to know that.
But, I'm going to go back to your point about this committee, because prior to this, I had not looked at the committee this year. Mm-hmm. I will be blatant about that. I did not know.
I knew Gary Barta was in charge, but I didn't pay that much attention to the rest.
Okay. So yes, he's in charge, the AD from Iowa, mm-hmm. right? That's who that is. So
Big Ten ranked in the top 21.
Let's look at this here. I think it's important for you to see this. So you've got Mitch Barnhart, who's the AD at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Gary Barta, who you mentioned. Paola Biovin, who is a professor at ASU, female.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then you've got Tom
Berman.
Does it say
what she's a professor of?
Let's see. It does. Professor of practice, Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication. First okay. female journalist to be named to the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame.
Sure.
So works love that. Okay. And then we've got Tom Berman, who is the AD at Wyoming. So they're Wyoming. Okay. Then we've got Charlie Cobb, director of athletics at Georgia State.
Okay. So that's two.
Yes. And then we've got Boo Corrigan, director of athletics, NC State.
Mm-hmm. ACC, baby.
Then you've got Rick George, right, my man, Rick George, who follows me on Twitter. Love the guy. director of athletics at Colorado. So there's a little, another
Pac-12 action.
Pac-12 thing. Then you got Will Shields, who's not an AD or anything. He is just, he's a former all-American offensive lineman and Outland Trophy winner. I mean, he's a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. He's a great player. But where it says current occupation says owns and operates a gymnasium and sports facility in Overland Park, Kansas. But we love to see a person, especially of color, on there. So you've got Will Shields, who's a player.
I'm not doubting that he knows the game. I'm not.
Right. So there you okay. Then you've got Gene Taylor, Kansas State Athletic Director, Joe Taylor, who is Vice President for Intercollegiate Athletics and Community Wellness at Virginia Union University. Also African-American, which is great. You've got more people diverse. We've got a more diverse group than I thought. John Urschel, pursuing a PhD in applied mathematics from MIT, Dan.
Pursuing a PhD in mathematics from MIT.
Yes. Expected to complete it. Well, it said expected completion in 2020. So I don't know if that's maybe because of the, I don't know what happened, the pandemic. Played professional football for 3 seasons, 5th round selection in the 2014 draft. He has a master's degree in mathematics from Penn State and a bachelor's degree in mathematics from Penn State. So you got to love
Big
a numbers
Ten,
guy
well,
on
Big
there.
Big Ten action. So that's why I'm here. That's why the Big Ten West has 3 teams in the top 20, whatever.
Then you've got Rod West. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tulane master's degree and Notre Dame bachelor's degree in mathematics.
Big Notre Dame okay. guy. Yeah.
But his current occupation, group president, utility operations for Energy Corporation. And then the last guy is Tyrone Willingham, which
and more Pac-12 bias for
to,
you.
I don't think I need to explain who that is to you.
You don't need to explain to me, but I think most people are going to be like, huh?
All right. Well,
he's the guy who went 0-12 at Washington a few years back, if you're wondering, and coached at Stanford and Notre Dame.
He did
as well.
He did coach at Stanford. I think that, yeah. So anyways, I think this is actually a more diverse group than I had previously assumed. So that's on me for assuming that it was going to be a bunch of talking heads. I do feel like
I said men, if I'm not mistaken, which we had one woman in that group.
You said old white guys as well.
But. I always say old white guys.
Okay, well, yeah. there's a diverse group, and I like that they have different backgrounds. I like that. I'd be interested. I mean, I don't know what their football acumen is as a group total.
Well, we know Ty Willingham's isn't disqualifying.
I think it's better than I like the group better than I did before I actually looked at them.
I saw the rankings and I dislike them. wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
It's not an easy job to get right. The biggest issue with the playoff committee selections is that it's not based on most deserving to get in. It's based on who they feel is the best, which always gives them leeway to say, well, but come on, Ohio State, they're probably better than Cincinnati, say. You know what I mean? They recruit better. They're probably better. They're usually better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And gives them that leeway to kind of find an excuse for Ohio State, but not find one for a G5 team. And that's the language of what the playoff is. That's just poorly done, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing we could take away from this first ranking is that the committee valued head-to-head a lot.
They did.
So if that's going to be a theme moving forward, then teams are going to have to think about that, I guess. But so if you're looking at that, yeah, Cincinnati's head-to-head against...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go.
A great way to think about head-to-head is to never have to worry about it by not losing a game. Three teams ahead of Cincinnati in the rankings.
You also need to be born into better situations. That's life, man. That's life.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Some people have things and some people don't. Some people are born into it and some people are not.
I'm not sitting here saying Cincinnati should or will make the playoff. I'm saying they should make the playoff if there was any justice in the world. But there isn't.
I don't know. But see, this is the thing is you're so focused on them. And this is you as the colloquial, like the collective you. Y'all are so focused. I'm not saying Cincinnati's a bad team. They're not. Do I think that they're one of the top four teams in the country that can win two games to win a national title against other good teams? No, I do not think that. Play good enough teams to be the best. They just don't. It's not their fault. But that's just the way the system is set up.
Okay, so this is my point, though. If SMU and Houston were ranked, which they should be, they'd get a shot at both of them later in the year, regular season, in the presumed AAC championship game, correct? But they're giving Ohio State these ranked games against a team like Minnesota, who's got no business being ranked, and against, let's say, Wisconsin in the conference championship game, who has no business being ranked. And they're saying, oh, well, they've got all these ranked wins, but they're deciding who's ranked and who isn't. They're deciding based on preconceived notions of who these schools are and who these programs are, what they should be. Because
you're focused too much on the rankings. You're focused way too much on what value people are placing on teams. And you're not looking at what the teams are doing on the field.
I am looking at that too. Absolutely.
Ohio State is a better team than Cincinnati on the field. That's just what it is.
I mean, they just struggled at home with the Penn State team who lost to
Cincinnati
Illinois.
Cincinnati struggled at Tulane in the first half. The team they should have no business struggling against.
I mean, 31-12 is still a pretty wide margin of victory.
They ended up doing okay, but that first half was bad. Was it not?
It was bad. I watched the game. I know what happened in it. I'm just saying,
You're not allowing your bias
How about this? Ohio State played a terrible first half against Tulsa. Where's the talk about that?
They did.
They won by basically the same margin that Tulane beat. That Cincinnati beat Tulane.
You're looking at numbers because you're not listening. What I'm saying is of the teams I've seen play in person. Okay. I've seen these teams play in person. I think it's different in person than it is on TV. I really do. Mm-hmm. And that's not, I can't.
You know, I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
It's 100%. It's just true. Like, and it's the eye test. It's the same thing that happened to Justin Herbert, the Oregon quarterback. Mm-hmm. People did not see him play in person. They did not stand next to the man and realize that this dude is going to be an NFL guy. Like, he's going to be the best of that class because they didn't see him in person. So for me, you cannot judge a team until you've seen them play in person, whether it be their best game or their worst game. You could still see how they adjust in game, how it's happening in real time, what they look like athletically up close. Mm-hmm. Those are variables that cannot be measured in rankings and wins and losses and all those things. They're intangible.
I know that they're intangible, but what I'm saying is, like, first off, Gary Barna and the rest of the playoff committee, they're not watching these games in person either, for the most part, unless it's their team.
And I think they should. That's completely fair.
My point's more like, if we're going to do it like this, which clearly we are as a system, this is how it's going to be decided. You do need to, like,
If you want to buy into it, then yes. Well, I'm not buying into it.
The purpose of Cincinnati, I'm buying into it and making the argument for them. You know, on the grand scheme of things, I don't think they're making the playoff. And like, but I'm saying, like, I think that if we're going to do it like this, there's reasons why they should be in the top four. And it doesn't matter if they can't beat Georgia, because no one can beat Georgia.
It does matter, because if you're going to be one of the top four teams in the country, you have to compete against top talent. But look, and they cannot.
Well, look at Notre
If they can't beat Georgia, what's the point? Can they get close? How close are they going to get?
How many close games in the semifinal round have there been? Like two the whole time that we've had the playoff?
And I have not
Florida agreed. Florida State couldn't play close to Oregon.
I have not agreed with those games. That is my premise for all of this.
Twice. Like, Oklahoma That's my gets premise. Blown out most years. You know what I mean? Like,
this is my premise. You're just proving my point. This is exactly what
I'm saying. Your point is bring back the BCS.
My point is that I don't buy into any of this stuff unless you can show me four teams that can actually like deserve to be there, which I don't know that we can every year. But Cincinnati doesn't get a pass just because they're power five. I mean, group of five.
Oh, no, here's
you
my thing.
Want to believe in them because they're the underdog and everybody wants to root for
I
them.
I believe in access.
And That's break what down I norms.
In. What I believe in is everyone should have equal access to the end of the year tournament that you're putting together to say this is who the champion will be, because the sample size in the sport is too small to truly say who's the best, because you don't get to see Ohio State play anyone in the SEC this year. Maybe Ohio State's better than Georgia and we're just not going to see it. And we are discrediting Penn State too much and discrediting, you know, Minnesota too much because they, you know, had a bad day against Bowling Green, but we'll never see them play an SEC team this year. And we'll never see Georgia play a game north of the Mason-Dixon line because they refuse to, frankly. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, they played Notre Dame once, but you know what I mean? Like, they just very rarely travel outside of their region for games. Right. The sample sizes are so small in this sport that you need to have access to everyone, including the group of five. And the current system, the way it's designed, keeps them from having any access to it whatsoever.
It's only going to get worse.
Expand with an automatic qualifier for the group of five or whatever, with conference realignment. Who knows what's going to actually be called or look like, but for those mid-major level teams.
Football is predicated on the have and have nots. It just is.
It is. Absolutely.
You can't fix that with a Cincinnati team in the playoff. You just can't.
No, you won't fix it with just one Cincinnati team in the playoff. What I'm saying is, like,
people want to. They want to believe that that's going to bridge the gap and fix everything. And it's not.
Well, they want to believe that once the glass barrier is broken for one G5 team, it will for the rest. That's what the belief or the hope is, I think.
Think it would backfire more than it would help.
Well, I don't think that anyone wants to be the four seed this year, if we're being honest, because like, it doesn't matter if you put Michigan State there, if you put, you know, Ohio State there, Oregon there, whoever plays Georgia is going to get destroyed. And, you know, it's fine. Georgia's the best team in the country by far this year. Like, and we know that, but the semifinals are never close games to begin with. So like, there's like one or two through, like, go back and look at it throughout the history of the college football playoff. There's like one or two worthwhile semifinals.
I've been at them. I understand.
They're not good games usually.
Don't know that
like, my argument. Oh, Washington, Alabama that year. That was a great game. You know?
The Pac-12 is not traditionally done well when it comes to this, to this stuff. So,
yeah, you know.
But this Oregon team, I'm telling you, when I saw them play Ohio State, there's so much talent and speed and athleticism on them. The Stanford game is tough because Stanford has not, like, they weren't bad. Okay. They were not a bad Stanford team, but they have now since suffered just debilitating injuries. All their wide receivers since that game have gone down, and Tanner McKee's not strong enough to lead the team without any receivers.
He's fine, but he's not going to stand out to you.
Right. Yeah. And they don't have a run game. David Shaw refuses to do that. And it's,
David Shaw refuses to do a lot of things.
Yeah, he does. So, and Stanford beating Oregon is part of my problem with that is like, for what?
Just to ruin the Pac-12.
I get you. Why?
Well, I think in the same vein, why does Oregon let all these Pac-12 teams that are inferior to them hang around? Like, they let UCLA do it.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, they let Cal hang around. I bet they're going to let Oregon State hang around. You know what I mean? Like,
the Pac-12 it's just crazy. And that's just why I used to make this argument that it's one of the best, if not, I argue with David Pollock about this, about it being the best conference in college football, because statistically, and then if you, not the last 2 years, but prior, you could make this argument because every game is a tough game for the teams that play each other, because the bottom teams still have four or five wins. Oregon State was at the bottom. They still had four wins, and you can't sleep on them. It's not like you go in the SEC where you're like, oh, we're going to Vanderbilt this week, you know, or like what Arkansas used to be.
In all fairness, we're going to Arizona this week. They're not good. They're really bad.
Yes. There was a time not that long ago though, when they had Khalil Tate and there was hope, and then I'm talking about like a couple years back, like prior to COVID, prior to that.
Well, yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like if you go in the SEC right now, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Missouri, none of them are any good. Right. You know what I mean? I think Mississippi State's highly overrated right now. You know what I mean? I don't believe in the air raid that much, to be honest. I think it's been figured out pretty well.
Well, yeah, you know it's coming. It's just like how much can fend it off?
Ole Miss is a one trick pony. They don't have a defense to speak of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so that's LSU's a joke. Like, LSU's a disaster right now. They've got talent, but they're a disaster. I get what you're saying.
People mistake the Pac-12's cannibalism for weakness. I don't think that's traditional. Now, I'm not going to speak for last year and this year because it's down years. But prior to that, I think people mistook it for that. And that's not what it was. It's good talent and good teams competing every weekend in hard environments.
The year in, year out, at least again through the playoff lens issue with the Pac-12 is they don't have a team that stands out. The ACC and that's does always the same been thing. The ACC cannibalizes itself too, except it's always had either Florida State or Clemson in the past decade who have been able to run the table and let everything else behind them cannibalize itself. You know, USC has not been that. Oregon's not been able to take that step to that level. Washington flat, like you thought for a little bit there, they could do it with Chris Peterson. They weren't
Stanford
able to do it
tried
consistently.
To be for a while. And all have tried, but there's no Alabama, it's not a real conference, right?
Well, yeah, there's not that one team that dominates.
Right, I know, that's the biggest problem.
It would help them a lot if USC was really good, but I don't see it happening, not at least in the next couple of years.
Not for a while. And now I don't know who that team is. Oregon's the only one.
I think
Stanford's not, USC's not.
I think there's really three schools in the Pac-12 that you can look to and say these three should be consistently good at football. Mm-hmm. I think they're USC, Oregon, and Washington, frankly. And Washington's a disaster right now. I do. I think Seattle's a pretty good location for that. I mean, there's debate to be had. I think they've got really good history. I think they've got good resources, a beautiful stadium. And frankly, they've got recent success. They've got a trip to the playoff in the modern era. Like
the Peterson era, though, is sullied by a lot of what went on. And I don't know.
Peterson had a cap to what he's able to do as a coach, I think. And
he walked away from it because of how it went too, though. That's the thing, is like the culture there is not good. And the high school recruiting culture is not good.
No. And you need someone who can fix that. But I'll tell you, the culture is really bad at a place like LSU, that's got a million Title IX lawsuits, or a place like Auburn, where there's like coups to overthrow Gus Malzahn by the defense coordinator. You know what I mean? Like the culture at Tennessee is terrible too. And those places don't get told, oh, you should never be good because you've got infighting issues. You know what I mean?
Well, because I'll tell you this, because football in the South, they're better at hiding it. They're better at keeping it.
I don't think they're better at hiding it. I think they just don't care as much. I think
whatever it is, they're able to get past it.
To use the Title IX at LSU as like an example, they just don't care by and large. Like they'll just hide the lawsuits as best as possible and do their best to like cover up, and no one really minds that much if that's what they're doing. Like I get that.
It's too moral. Eventually somebody finds out and tells somebody, and then it gets out and it gets, so.
You know what I mean?
It's whatever. Anyways,
that's a tangent. Yeah.
It is what it is. You know, people are going to be upset. I'm not going to go on Twitter for like 24 hours till this clears out.
Every Tuesday night.
Yeah. I'm just going to be like, nope. See y'all Wednesday night.
Did you see the video UMass Athletics put out? It was like a 10-minute video with their athletic director, Ryan Bamford, talking about all what they were doing for conference realignment. Oh, it was good. He had this whole little pamphlet that they sent to Conference USA. He held it up. It looked like a book report you did overnight.
Oh my God.
It was terrible.
All of this stuff is so sad. Like it's just a crazy time in college football. We're just trying to get through it. You know, we're just trying to get through the season. This point,
I just had a notification on my phone, by the way, that headline read snub to Cincinnati on Bearable. Get it? Like Bearcats. Oh, I love it. I think that's where we should end. You can find me at Dan_Morrison96 on Twitter.
I'm Emilem, E-M-I-L-N-E-M on Twitter and Instagram. And here's my question to leave you guys with. Why is Cincinnati ambitious? So I saw them described as ambitious, unbeaten Cincinnati.
God. Wait, who what? Described
where
them
does like the where does the ambition, what does it
because
mean
because they
be
want
ambitious?
To make the playoff? Because
doesn't everybody, didn't you say everybody wants to make the playoff?
That is the end goal, you would think. You so want everyone wants ambitious. Everyone wants access to it. Like,
why is Cincinnati
that feels like
more
a
ambitious?
That feels very condescending. Like, oh, nice try, guys. I see you working hard over there. Now let's
Cincinnati
go get
Cincinnati fans.
Michigan
I want
State.
To hear from you. Why are you guys ambitious? Why is your team ambitious? I want to know. Please tweet at me accordingly.
Cincinnati would be Michigan State if we're doing a head-to-head thing, by the way. We're done here.